Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 141, I chat with Ralph Potts, AVS Forum Blu-ray reviewer, about what he looks for in the best Blu-rays, plus gift ideas for this holiday season. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded December 17th, 2012, episode 141, How to Watch Blu-ray. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek. This week, I'm pleased to welcome Ralph Potts, the Blu-ray reviewer on AVS Forum. Hey, Ralph, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. Thank you very much.
So happy to have you here. I want to let everybody know who's watching in real time, live at live.twit.tv, or logged into the chat room, more particularly, at irc.twit.tv, can post questions for Ralph, and I'll pass along as many as I can. We're going to be talking today about Blu-ray, since, Ralph, that's what you do for AVS Forum. You review Blu-ray titles, both movies and TV shows, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah. And really what we're going to be talking about today is not so much the movies and TV shows themselves, because the quality thereof is somewhat subjective. I mean, we could certainly apply reviewers' standards, and many people do. But I'm more interested today to talk about the quality of the Blu-ray presentation itself. But before we do, I want to start by asking you, what equipment do you have in your home theater that you use to review Blu-ray titles?
Well, Scott, I have a suite of Canton Ergo loudspeakers. I use SVS subs for the low end. And for on the video end, I have a JVC RS55. It's a 3D 1080p front projector. And that shines on a Stewart film screen. It's the ST130 Studio Tech, beautiful screen. It's the Series G3. Mm-hmm. And and I use Oppo, the latest Oppo Blu-ray player, actually the BDP103. And to supplement that, I also have a Panasonic 3D Blu-ray player.
Mm-hmm. What about your amplification or AV receiver?
Right. I don't use a receiver. I use separates. Mm-hmm. I use the Onkyo 5508. It's an AV processor. And to power the speakers, I use a Sherborne 7-channel amp, and it's the Model 7200. Very nice amplifier.
Mm. How many subs? You said SVS subs, plural.
Right. Well, I have the PB13 Ultra that I have here in the front of the room, and actually in the rear of the room, the SB12.
Sounds great. Are they both centered on those respective walls?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, that's my preferred positioning as well. Some people, for example, Tom Norton, who's been on the show quite a bit, prefers his sub in the corner, which, as you know, results in a greater amount of boundary bass boost. Say that three times fast. But I prefer the bass not to be boosted that much by the environment. So I like to put them on at the halfway point. So I'm in your camp on that.
Sure.
Okay. Well, we're already getting a bunch of questions in the chat room. So I might just jump in. Well, let me first start instead by talk to me a minute about, and I'm sure most listeners of this show will already know this, but the importance of calibrating and adjusting your video and audio system to get the most out of the Blu-rays that you do have.
You know, Scott, I think that it's imperative, actually, that you start with a level playing field when it comes to the audio and the video. Because when Blu-ray discs are mixed by the sound engineers, you know, there are certain things that are meant to be in certain places at certain levels in terms of sound. So, you know, if and when all possible, you want to ensure that your system is properly calibrated or as best you can to ensure that there's proper balance throughout. And that includes the low frequency end as well. And in terms of video, it's probably just as critical. It's just as critical so that, you know, most importantly, I believe are, you know, white balancing and calibrating white and black levels to ensure that contrast is properly adjusted. Black levels are properly adjusted. In terms of, you know, accurate colors and things like that, you know, if you don't have the wherewithal or the training or the tools to properly adjust the, you know, the various levels of color, chroma and so forth on your display, then the best thing you can do is use a disc that you can get commercially. I found that the Disney WOW disc works very well. I also use the ABS 709 HD a test disc and recommend that as well. So at a minimum, if you can't do anything else, then you're going to want to use those to properly adjust those levels or the levels that you can. And like I said, to try and at least level the playing field.
Exactly. The AVS disc, I don't know if you can get that as a disc or if you download it and then burn it onto a disc. I know that you can get it that way. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's actually how I got it.
Yeah, exactly. Or you can go out and buy from Amazon or wherever the Disney WOW disc, which I also recommend, especially for those who are not super geeky. If you are a little more geeky, you can go for the Spears and Munsell high-definition benchmark or Joe Kane's Digital Video Essentials HD Basics, the Blu-ray version of that. Right. Any one of those will help you adjust your black and white levels, which are really, I think, if you select the movie picture mode or the cinema picture mode, whatever it's called along those lines, make sure that the color temperature is probably in the warm setting, and then set your brightness and contrast controls, which control your black level and white level respectively, you're you know, 75-80% of the way there, typically.
Correct.
And then if you want to go the extra mile, you can hire an ISF or THX certified calibrator and you know, have them take it the rest of the way. Take it on home, as they say. But in any event, I'm sure you had your system calibrated 10 ways to Sunday.
10 ways to Sunday, yes.
So what exactly, what are the performance aspects? When you're looking at a Blu-ray, getting ready to review it, what are the performance aspects that you're really looking for or looking at, I should say?
Well, I think the first thing I'd like to say regarding that, you know, is, I mean, as a, you know, as a writer, as a reviewer, my goal is to try and give readers some type, at least a very, very solid foundation in terms of what they can expect, reasonable expectation of what they can expect when they, you know, obtain a Blu-ray and pop it in their player. So my goal as a writer is to try and give them, you know, as close to a description of what they can expect to see when they put that disc on as possible. And I think as enthusiasts, we would all hope that, you know, our favorite films or new release films, you know, catalog titles, et cetera, that are coming to Blu-ray, are transferred from film to video, and as closely as possible preserve the elements that were captured by the camera's lens. And I mean, in terms of looking at and looking at film, inherently film has a higher resolution than video. But I mean, an image that's 1920 by 1080 can look very, very good. So in sitting down and looking at a Blu-ray disc, probably the first thing that strikes most of us when looking at high definition is the level of detail and resolution within the image. So the first thing that, you know, I sit down and I look at is a, you know, you try to assess if what you're seeing is a clean reproduction, and that's not always that easy. And then B, you know, you look at things like the level of detail, both in close-ups, in wide-angle shots, mid-level pans. Is there any noise in the image? Does the image appear to have been manipulated in some way, you know, post-production or pre-mastering during the transfer process? And then you look at things like black levels, shadow detail, white detail, color reproduction, flesh tone reproduction. Do they appear natural? And depending on, you know, how familiar you are with what you're watching, are they natural? So these are some of the things that I look for.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you go out to the movies much? I ask because I wonder if you say go out to a theater, commercial theater, and watch a movie. And then when you get the Blu-ray, do you have any sense of how closely that Blu-ray matches what you saw in the commercial cinema? Or has there simply been too much time elapsed between those two events that makes the memory not very reliable anyway?
Scott, I think it depends on the film. There are certain films that you see that kind of, you know, get imprinted on you. And then there are some that are, you know, less so, let's say a little forgettable or not quite as remarkable. So I think that there are instances where, you know, you do recollect, you know, obviously depending on how long it's been. If it's a catalog title that you saw 10 years ago, no. But if it's a film you saw 6 months ago, yeah, there's a good chance. And, you know, I think that you also try to hope that what you're seeing in the theater is accurate. I mean, how far do we go? Unless you're sitting there looking at the master, which of course none of us, or at least I don't have access to. So, you know, you look at it and I think it comes a certain point where, you know, you get to a line and you say, you know, this looks natural. This looks, you know, this looks good. This looks accurate, that type of thing. And you do the best you can and go from there.
Yeah. You mentioned things like post-production processing, and one of the most egregious examples of that, I think, is what's called edge enhancement. Describe for us that and maybe some other examples of post-production processing that ends up detracting from the picture.
Well, what edge enhancement essentially is a post-production, obviously a post-production technique that's used to sharpen the image, to bring out more definition in the image. It's an artificial sharpening tool that's used. The problem with it is generally is that it has a distortive effect, generally results in ringing, what we call ringing around edges or hard lines within the image,
and what does that ringing look like?
It looks like almost like a halo or an outline. Is the best way that I could describe it around. Like I said, images that have you know, horizontal, vertical, straight, or hard lines.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be pretty deleterious. Especially if it's over applied. I mean, I think there are instances where it is applied where it's not quite as egregious, but there's times where it's excessive.
Right. Right.
And in terms of looking at some other issues, probably the one that gets the most attention, Scott, is what's referred to as DNR or digital noise reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is a technique that's used to, I think what the purpose of it is to try and make the image appear cleaner, and maybe to cover up maybe blemishes or things like that may appear on the print. But if used excessively, or even in some cases moderate to a little higher than moderate, it can result in odd looking video presentations, skin textures that appear smooth, lacking in detail, almost waxy in appearance, And it can rob the image of the high definition, the things that make high definition so rewarding in terms of the richness and fidelity of the quality of the picture.
Mm-hmm. Now, does your critical eye, clearly you have a very critical eye and you're looking at all of these aspects of the picture, does that interfere with your enjoyment of the movie? I think back to, as a musician, I'm asked all the time, well, because you know music and you know playing technique and so on, are you listening with a different ear, a more analytical, critical ear than a non-experienced musician? And the answer is yes, we do. That doesn't necessarily detract from the enjoyment of the music if it's played well. But I wonder if there's a correlate when reviewing Blu-rays or just, you know, when you sit down to just watch a movie because you want to watch a movie, are you still, any part of your brain still kind of going to that critical place of, oh, look at that, they used a little too much edge enhancement there or whatever?
Unfortunately, it never stops. it's kind of the bane of existence in my household. My family, and I have to tell you that my wife and my daughter and my son have gotten pretty good at being critical themselves.
You've taught them well, eh?
Not about some of the finer things, Scott, but if things don't look right, they'll generally bring them up and point them out to me, which I find very interesting. But to get back to your question, yeah, I think it's something that, you know, it becomes innate. You know, when you're sitting and you're watching films, and that happens. But to ruin the does it interfere with the enjoyment of the film or somehow detract from the experience? No, I don't think so. No.
Yeah. I'm going to go to a few questions in the chat room now because we are getting quite a few. Magpie X86 asks, have Blu-rays, the physical disc itself, turned out to be any better or worse for wear with regard to scuffs and mars, resistance to surface blemishes, even fingerprints, that sort of thing? Is that really much of a concern?
I don't think so. I don't think that any of them and any shiny disc is going to be fingerprint resistant or somehow less resistant to fingerprints. However, the coating on the Blu-rays does make them less susceptible to light surface level scratches and things like that. And obviously, the best thing that you can do is keep your discs in their cases. And you know, when you're done with them, if you notice fingerprints on them, wipe them off.
Is there any special way to do that? And anything you should, like, don't use alcohol, probably. Just use a clean cloth, maybe soap and water. What's the best way to do that?
I wouldn't use any type of a cleaner on your discs. If it's just fingerprints, if you have a microfiber cloth, a finer one that you would use to clean your eyeglasses, that would more than be sufficient. If you have anything that is, tacky or anything like that, or a little heavier than that, than fingerprints that might get on the discs, a little warm water and a soft cloth, preferably, microfiber. Now, maybe one that has a heavier, something that's a little heavier than the type you use to clean your glasses, a little warm water and a little elbow grease will take care of it.
Yeah. Okay. we're going to be talking about your favorite Blu-rays throughout the show. And we're going to start with a question from Beatmaster, which asks, as musicians, what are the best concerts on Blu-ray?
Well, I got to tell you, Scott, I wish I could answer that for him. I haven't reviewed a lot of concerts on Blu-ray, so I would probably not be the best judge for a question like that. So, unfortunately, I can't help him there.
Okay, but it does bring up the question that I was going to raise a little earlier. We talked about what you look for in the video presentation. What do you listen for in the audio presentation?
Well, I think as humans, we are obviously we are feeling people. So, when we sit down to watch a movie, and regardless of what genre, whether it's a thriller or it's an action movie or whatever, we sit down and we watch a movie and we get into it. We want to be taken We want to be taken in by the movie. We want to, step from where we are into what's going on screen. And you know, we do that. Yes, we do that both using the content, obviously, but we're tactile. You know, we're tactile beings. So you know, we like to be stimulated both visually and physically. And I think that in terms of the sound, for me anyway, I'm looking for something. I look for an immersive experience in terms of, especially if it's an action type movie. I look for the quality of the dialogue. How clear is the dialogue? How clear is it in relation to the other sounds that are coming through the audio mix, both in the rear of the room as well as the front soundstage? Obviously, you're looking for. I look for balance. I want to ensure that all the sounds that are going on, not only do they correlate to what's occurring on screen, but how well do they integrate both up front as well as in the rear of the room, should there be any information that's mixed to the surrounds. So I look for balance within the audio mix. I look for clarity in the audio mix, soundstage, presence. Do low-level sounds. Are low-level sounds as easily discerned as the active or more bombastic aspects of the sound? And of course, there's the low frequency effects that are generated by the subwoofer, and depending on your setup, maybe even your main speakers. How rich is the bass? How hard does the bass hit? Again, is there a correlation between what you're seeing on screen versus what you're feeling in the room? You know, does the low level energy, does it come into the room? Is it localized? Does it feel like it's weak? So these are things that I look for, but most importantly, I think it has to be an involving experience. And if it's an involving experience, then the sound designer's done his job. But I think probably for me anyway, the most important aspect of it is how well the sound is balanced within the room and the correlation between what I'm hearing versus what I'm seeing and that mm-hmm. entire experience.
Do you listen at reference level?
I would say that I don't listen. I listen very close to reference, but it also depends on when I'm watching and what I'm watching. Do I listen at reference all the time? No, I don't listen at reference all the time.
And just so that everybody understands, reference level is pretty loud. It's I believe it's measured, isn't it, with pink noise or white noise?
That's right.
you want to crank it up to where your sound level meter at your sound position at your listening position measures 85 dB.
That's right.
And believe me, that's pretty loud.
It's loud.
And so I don't listen at reference level myself. Let's see. Higgs Boson is asking, what Blu-ray do you use for color and sound reference? Probably more than one.
Yeah, there isn't one disc. And to be perfectly frank, in terms of reference for sound or reference for, I think that there are discs that you may use for a variety of reasons. There may be some titles that you look at because, if you want to check a display for, shadow detail, or if you want to look at color reproduction, or if you are listening to see, you want to see, how well bass is reproduced by a sub, or you've just calibrated your system and you want to listen to see how well everything sounds together. There are different discs that you use for that, but there isn't a disc that I would say, or at least a Blu-ray disc, a movie type disc that I would say that I specifically use for reference for video and sound. There isn't just one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. When I review TVs, I have certain discs that I use. One might be for shadow detail and one might be for black levels and so on and so forth. So different ones there. TV's Egon says that a 1.3 gain screen, we're getting back to your equipment now, with that bright a projector must be very bright. And I'm assuming that you're using a 1.3 gain screen, which isn't really all that much gain, in order to make 3D look relatively bright.
That's exactly right, Scott. I wanted a screen that had a little gain, but not too much. And you're right, 1.3 gain isn't what I would consider to be high. This isn't like a daylight high power or something like that, which is a very high gain screen. But at the same time, with my JVC RS55, the 1.3 gain gives me enough brightness, plenty of brightness for watching 3D. And the projector has a 3D mode, which ramps up the brightness just a bit anyway.
Right. And with that JVC, as I recall, you got great black levels too.
Superb black levels. It's really a fantastic projector.
How big is the screen? I forgot to ask that.
It's 100 inches diagonal. It's a 1.78 to one aspect, and it's 100 inches diagonal.
Ah, you didn't go for a 2.35 screen, huh? A wider aspect ratio for movies?
Nope, I did not. We actually used the theater down here also for TV watching and so forth and so on. So I went with the 1.78.
Right. Understood. Okay. Ken Crayley is in the chat room. He's asking, on your best of 2012 Blu-rays on AVS Forum, which we're going to get to more in a minute, why was the Bond 50 set not on the list?
I know. It's terrible. I've had several members contact me or comment about that. And the answer, folks, is that I didn't have the opportunity to review the set, and I'm sorry about that. So it wasn't a set that I've actually had the opportunity to see, although I have reviewed quite a few of the discs that were included in the set, but I didn't have the chance to review the set, so I didn't think it would be appropriate to add it to my list, because the titles that are in the list are all films that I've reviewed or seen.
Now, regarding the Bond set. There are many of the Bond movies came out individually on Blu-ray. Are these the same, or did they redo them in some way for the set? Do you know?
To my knowledge, Scott, they're the same. They're, as far as I know, there haven't been any remasters or anything like that. So to my knowledge, they're the same.
Now, one thing we talked about, you and I, off the air before we came on here was how the overall quality of Blu-ray discs has been improving over the, 5-6 years we've had Blu-ray now?
Yeah, it's been 6 years.
Six years already. I remember some of the early ones that came out that were just dogs. I mean, The Fifth Element was one. Patton was another that you mentioned. I hadn't seen that, but man, full of noise and just awful.
Back at that time, we had the whole format war going on, and HD DVD came, was the first high definition optical format. They kind of broke free first. So I think that early on, there might have been a little rushing going on to try and get some of these discs out on Blu-ray. And you mentioned The Fifth Element, which is, I'm sure as you remember, The Fifth Element was it was the go-to reference disc on DVD for many of us.
Yeah, especially the Superbit version.
Oh yeah, and we were all waiting eagerly for The Fifth Element to come to Blu-ray, and it was released in 2006, and it was pretty disappointing. The image on the disc, they used MPEG-2 compression. And I mean, not that MPEG-2 compression is a bad thing. It wasn't a bad thing, but, the image was soft. The source print wasn't in very good shape. And the colors on the disc appeared to be skewed when compared to, the Superbit DVD version. And that left a sour taste in some people's mouths. And, there was actually quite an uproar over it. But Sony did the right thing and turned around and reissued the disc. Actually, I think they had a trade-in program for people who bought the original. Yep. And they remastered it and re-released it, and it's a beautiful thing.
And now it looks great.
Yeah.
And they did the same thing with Patton, I think, right?
Yes. Patton came out in 2008 on Blu-ray. And, you know, it was it suffered from I guess what you would call excessive DNR, digital noise reduction. And it was pretty disappointing to a lot of fans. Now, a catalog release title like that, I mean, that's considered a classic film for many. And the for those who anticipated the, you know, the release on Blu-ray, it was very disappointing. However, although it took them a little time, 20th Century Fox did re-release it. Matter of fact, within the last few months on Blu-ray, and did a bang-up job on it. They remastered it, and it looks absolutely beautiful. And actually, both those reviews, I have done both those reviews, and it's quite a difference.
Speaking of catalog titles, classic movies, there have been quite a few that have come out more recently that really look great, I think, right?
Absolutely. I mean, everybody's term or definition of classic may be a little different.
It may be a little different. All right.
Now, for me, I'm a huge Jaws fan. And Universal released Jaws this year on Blu-ray with a remastered video. And it's just absolutely gorgeous. So I waited for that one eagerly, and I wasn't disappointed. Lawrence of Arabia was released this year on Blu-ray. And again, I would say probably the word that I would use to describe Lawrence of Arabia on Blu-ray is stunning. It just looks absolutely beautiful. We've also seen titles like Citizen Kane, Singing in the Rain, The Sound of Music, titles like that, considered classic films that have come to Blu-ray and truly, truly were well worth the wait.
Let's see. Got another couple questions in the chat room. What do you recommend for a Blu-ray player? I mean, obviously the Oppo is my personal favorite, and it's the one you use as well. But the 103 is $500. So if somebody doesn't have quite that kind of scratch, what do you recommend?
You know, Scott, I would look at players by Panasonic. I've always found, and I have a Panasonic Blu-ray player in my reference system that I use, and I've probably owned the first Blu-ray player that I bought was a Panasonic, the BD-10, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I find their players to be very reliable and generally trouble-free. And you can get, their 100 series or 200 series players for, well under $200. So I would say take a look at Panasonic and start there.
Mm-hmm. I would have to agree with you on that. Exactly. It's what I tell people all the time. Somebody here in the chat room. Oh, Tron had the question. How come it is that some Blu-rays will start up where you left off and others won't? Is it a function of the studios being cheap and not putting in the right thing on the disc, or is it a function of the player or some of both?
No, it's definitely a limitation on the disc. The players, the players have little to do with it. And I'm not really sure why. I remember in the early days of Blu-ray, first of all, we all came from DVD, where, essentially if you had a player, and there were some players, quite a few that would pick up where you left off when you took a disc out. There were some that didn't, but most of them did. But when we went to Blu-ray, and I believe HD DVD, but Blu-ray would not, it was actually, for whatever reason, it was a limitation that was inherent in the disc. And I think it was done by the studios, and I don't really know why. Now you have certain studios that that have the discs so that they're flagged, so that when you remove the disc, it will remember where you left off. And when you put the disc in, it'll prompt you and ask you if you want to restart from where you left off or back from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Some players will allow, if the disc allows it, some players will allow you to bookmark. Some discs will allow you to bookmark the last known location where you were, and when you load the disc in, you would actually have to go into the menu, go into the bookmark feature, and then in there would be the bookmark that you placed with a timestamp, and then you can resume from there. And in some cases, not. And I don't know. There doesn't seem to be a rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah, sadly, there's no standardization of that particular feature or many other features for that matter. We're going to talk more about features on Blu-ray discs and how those have evolved over the last 6 years. But before we do, I do want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, which is Netflix. Now, we're talking about Blu-rays here, and you can certainly rent Blu-rays from Netflix, as Netflix has always provided, by mail. Or you can opt to stream the thousands of TV episodes and movies that Netflix offers online that you can stream directly to just about any consumer electronics device, including your TV, of course, or your Blu-ray player or your gaming console or the set-top box or your computer even, smartphone, tablet, just about any device these days that has some sort of display capability will give you the opportunity. We'll have a Netflix app on it that lets you go log into your account and stream as much as you want for $8 a month. So it's really quite the deal. You can even start on one device and finish on another, so giving you the ultimate in convenience and flexibility. Now, for those few of our listeners and watchers who have not tried Netflix streaming, you can go to netflix.com/twit and start up a 30-day free trial. Go check it out. See what you think. And be sure to use that URL, netflix.com/twit. And we thank Netflix very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire Twit network. So we were talking about the evolution of Blu-ray and how in the early days there were some examples of not such great quality. You mentioned MPEG-2, which is one of the ways in which video is encoded onto the disc. And that was how what was used also on DVDs. But now we've moved on. We're now at MPEG-4, also known as H.264. I think that's the primary one that's being used these days, right?
Yes, it is. It's also referred to as ABC. But it's the primary one. Occasionally you'll see Microsoft's VC1.
I was going to ask you about that one. That made a big splash when it first came out, but I haven't seen much about it lately.
It's odd, Scott, but every now and again, I'll run across a disc that is encoded with VC1, using VC1. Universal uses it from time to time. Universal Studios uses it from time to time. Primarily, ABC or MPEG-4 is the format that's, or the encoding process that's used. But every now and again, you'll see VC1 pop up. And a lot of the early Blu-ray releases used MPEG-2, but MPEG-4 is now pretty much taken over.
Mm-hmm. And what about audio formats? I've got some questions in the chat room. For example, let me make sure I can find it here. Victorio is asking why so many rental Blu-ray discs, and I'm not sure it's really rentals or just Blu-ray discs, lack DTS HD Master Audio or Dolby True HD, which are the lossless audio formats. Up till recently, we had what are called lossy formats that threw away a lot of audio information, Dolby Digital and regular DTS. But on Blu-ray, there's enough room to store the audio in a lossless compression. So we've seen that evolution, which is great. What's the answer to Victoria's question? Do you know, is it rentals that don't have these high quality codecs or just certain discs?
No, it's the rentals. And that's a studio based decision. Honestly, that I can't answer. I know that, several of the studios do it. And it's very frustrating, I know, to consumers, because I've had, many forum members of our AV community who have expressed dismay. the fact that they rent these discs, I'll write a review and I'll rave about or I'll comment about the quality of the 7.1 channel DTS HD Master Audio surround mix. And, they rush out and rent it and get it home, and it's 5.1, Dolby Digital lossy.
I didn't even know this, that the rental disc would be different from the purchase disc.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't know why.
Wow. Well, that's a bummer.
It's not in every case, Scott, just to be clear about that.
Okay. All right. Let's make sure we're fair about this. iPhone Kiki in the chat room is asking, what are the top five, but whatever number you want to come up with, best looking 3D Blu-rays?
Well, let's see. I have my notes here. I did jot down a couple. Now this would be me. This is what I would consider to look very, very good. I think number one would probably have to be Avatar.
Even so, first one to make the really big 3D splash.
And splash it did. And I remember getting Avatar was on Blu-ray was a bit of a process in the beginning because it was only available as part of a purchase through Panasonic. If you bought a Panasonic product, a Blu-ray player and a TV, then you could get this, you know, this 3D version of Avatar. It was but not otherwise. Until recently, it was just recently released earlier this year. When I say earlier, it was probably in the last 4 or 5 months. You know, commercially for consumers. But I did manage to get a hold of a copy. My partner, my writing partner at AVS, formerly Weber, got a copy and sent it over to me, and I was able to review it. And it's spectacular. And of all the the titles that are available on 3D on Blu-ray, it still stands out.
Wow.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say what else? What Prometheus. About more recent titles?
Prometheus was released this year on Blu-ray, and I know it was it was a highly anticipated title. Now my first experience of it, I didn't see it theatrically. My first experience of Prometheus was here in my theater in 3D, and I'll tell you, Prometheus in 3D gives Avatar a run for its money. It looks spectacular. You know, it's a very stylized film visually, but it looks absolutely stunning in 3D. So Prometheus is another.
What about animated titles? I know there are some really good 3D animated titles.
Well, Tangled is an animated title from Disney that got very high marks from me. This is a film that Tangled doesn't use a lot of screen popping effects or anything, although there are some, but it looks spectacular because of the rendition of color, the natural depth on screen, and the way that it was done. It's very enamoring. So Tangled is an animated title that looks very good. Madagascar 3, I just reviewed that one within the last 3 or 4 months. And again, Madagascar 3 looks from DreamWorks looks spectacular as well in 3D.
Mm-hmm. Beatmaster in the chat room is asking, as a reviewer, how much do you care about the extras? And I was going to ask you about the extra, the bonus materials on DVDs. And if you do, which ones do you care about the most? We've seen, I think, an evolution of bonus materials. And I think you might have something also to say about BD Live. But start with, you know, just generally speaking, how much do you pay attention to bonus materials when you're reviewing?
Well, I don't want to say unfortunately. I mean, as far as bonus material goes, it's part of my job to watch the bonus materials so that I can, you know, rate them and so forth for readers. But I think for me, bonus features are a mixed bag in that some of them can be a little superfluous, thrown in, added on, whatever, deleted scenes, things like that, that really don't necessarily interest me. However, there are aspects that I find interesting, and that is, especially if it's a film that you are interested in. You don't mind looking at, I enjoy looking at, you know, the production featurettes, and the production featurettes, you know, usually we'll have interviews with the cast or insights from the filmmakers and things like that, that I find very interesting. And sometimes there's, you know, and we're going to discuss this, I'm sure, Scott, later, the, you know, the interactive content that we started to see now that's become more readily available with some Blu-ray discs. I find that interesting, you know, just because, you know, I'm a little bit of a geek. So,
more than a little, I'd say.
Anytime I can get my iPad out and interact with a movie that I'm watching on Blu-ray using that, then that's a good thing.
So do you use the iPad as a sort of a second screen experience? Do more Blu-rays offer quote-unquote second screen experience with a tablet?
We're seeing a bit more of that now. I would say the majority of them don't. But certain studios have, you know, are supporting it, you know, more so than others. You know, Sony has now begun. Universal does it. Disney has done it. So we are starting to see, you know, as we're now beginning to evolve and, you know, with you know, a lot of the gadgetry that's available now that you can integrate not only with your home network, but now obviously with Movie Center and your player that is connected to the network, we're starting to see more and more of that. But I wouldn't say that it's the norm. It's not at this point.
Not yet, anyway.
We're getting there.
We're getting there, yeah. What about BD Live? That was a feature that was touted all the way back to the beginning of Blu-ray, as you connect your player to the internet with an Ethernet cable or even Wi-Fi, and you know, you can do all kinds of things, presumably. Has that taken off, or did that kind of sputter?
I would say it sputtered. You know, BD Live, and as you said, you know, it was touted early on. Of course, the first players that came out didn't even have you know, wired or wireless capabilities. But BD Live was touted as a way, again, you know, to get interactive content streamed to your player relative to the movie that you were watching. I remember Sony had a feature called Movie IQ. When you loaded a disc, you had the option of watching the movie with this feature, Movie IQ, which would stream content through while you were watching the film. You'd have, you know, a picture-in-picture screen that would come up with details or behind-the-scenes information, you know, character profiles or actor profiles, things like that. And that kind of went away as well. So BD Live it's still around. It's still used. What I see that it's used for, at least predominantly at this point, is, you know, when you load a disc into your player, the first thing that happens is the player attempts to connect to BD Live, usually to stream trailers and content that the studio wants to send through for, you know, for consumers to sit and watch before the movie starts. And what it does, Scott, most of the time, is bog down the load time on the disc that you put in there and leave you sitting in the dark staring at a blank screen, which I find extremely annoying.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And speaking of trailers, not only does BD Live then sometimes push those trailers to you from over the internet, causing lots of delays, but in some cases, some studios put a lot of trailers on the beginning of the disc. As soon as you put it in, you have to watch them. You can't hit the menu button even. You just have to like skip over each one individually. And there may even be a case or two where you can't even do that. What's up with that?
I don't know, Scott. What is up with that?
What the heck is up with that?
You know, I mean, we're sitting here and, you know, and you have to thumb through. And when I say thumb through, you know, you just hitting the forward button, because there's sometimes 6 or 8 trailers that you have to endure before you can get to the main menu of the disc. And you're right. It's designed so that there's no way that you can just jump to the menu from there. You either have to fast forward or hit the next button to skip through them all. Now, to be fair, there are sometimes, I mean, personally, what I tend to do is I'll sit and watch the first minute or so of a trailer to see if it's something I may be interested in, because sometimes you know, you do find content that you are interested in, it may be coming to theaters or coming to Blu-ray. But after you've done that once, if you ever want to watch the movie again, you got to sit through and do it all over again. Mm-hmm. So after that first time, it's not really fun anymore. Right. So yeah, you're right. And I don't remember, there were a few discs that I don't remember the studio, but there were a few where you couldn't even fast forward. I mean, you couldn't even hit the next the chapter skip. You had to literally hold down the fast forward key to get through it.
Right. Ridiculous. Beatmaster in the chat. DJ Boogie Monster in the chat room is asking if you've ever used one of these butt kickers or D-Box type motion simulator things under your seat, you know, which actually rumble with the subwoofer when the rocket is going off or whatever. Have you ever used one of those?
I personally have not had them in my theater, but I have been places where they, you know, that have used butt kickers. And I know people that have used butt kickers, and they're transducers, and they're actually very effective at increasing the, you know, the being there aspect of feeling the bass. And there's a number of members in our AV community at ABS who swear by them.
Yeah, I'm not one of them, I'm afraid. I'm pretty prone to motion sickness. I remember a couple times at Cedia, I would go to the Runco booth and they'd have all these butt kickers and or D-Box, I forget which one, you know, and they would lead me to the seat with the butt kicker in it. And the first time I did it, I sort of got up and ran out of the room. I was getting sick. And every other time I would go there and they'd say, oh, we've saved a seat for you without one of those in it. okay, let's see. See if I got any other questions for you. Well, I've got plenty of questions for you. But you know what? We're kind of running out of time. So what I'd like to do to make sure we have enough time to go over it, John, our engineer, if you can go to avsforum.com. Sorry, I didn't alert you to this before. And click on the best Blu-rays of 2012, which should be in the slider right at the top of the homepage. We will see a list of the movies that Ralph has identified as the best Blu-rays of 2012. And let's just go down the list and give us a sentence or two about each of these, why you picked it. Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. I've seen that one. That dust storm is pretty amazing.
You know, Scott, the dust storm, the Kremlin explosion, the action, you know, the scene outside of the giant tower, you know, the scaling the building. You know, whether you're a big fan of Tom Cruise's or not, you got to admit that he makes a really good action film. And I really enjoyed Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. And I felt that, you know, based upon the quality of the disc in terms of the audio video, but also the content, you know, I thought that it was worthy and a standout disc for this year.
Mm-hmm. Next, we have The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Looks like Daniel Craig. I didn't see that movie, so I wasn't aware that James Bond was also in that one.
Yeah, it was. I actually saw that one theatrically as well. And very, you know, a very dark, dark film, not thematically dark, you know, a very interesting story. And I guess, you know, it's a remake, of a foreign film. It's based on a series. And this is the first film in the series that we've seen released here in North America. Very intriguing, you know, story full of great performances. And a superb, you know, technical release from Sony. Mm-hmm. So definitely, again, you know, for me, a standout this year and one that I felt deserved recognition.
Now, I've scrolled down a bit to the Avengers, and I'm pretty sure that was a 3D conversion. Was it not?
Yes, it was. That was a 3D conversion. I saw that in theaters as well. I
thought it was, you know, a pretty good 3D conversion myself.
I thought it was fair. I wasn't overly impressed with the 3D. The 2D video quality was another story. This is a movie as an action fan that for me anyway that I could watch, you know, over and over. So mm-hmm. you know, we went saw it in the theaters, then I've seen it, you know, twice here. Watched it in 3D here, watched it in 2D here. It was a big package, you know, from Disney and Marvel. One that I felt was deserving of recognition for this year, because it was one of the most, you know, highly anticipated new release films that came to Blu-ray. And I think that it succeeded at being a great release.
Now I'm skipping down a little bit further here, and I'm amazed actually that you have Monty Python and the Holy Grail, one of my favorite movies of all time. But is it really that good a Blu-ray?
Yeah, you know, it's a classic. It's a classic film, and Sony did a superb job, a bang up job on this release on Blu-ray. Reference quality, you know, video or sound, but it's a solid transfer. It looks it's faithful, and it looks beautiful. It's got a nice supplemental package that comes along with it, and I felt that in that light that it was deserving of recognition for this year, at least. And again, this is my list, so
exactly
that was
right.
One that I chose.
Sure, of course.
One that I chose and felt that it was worthy.
Here's a television series, Homeland Season 1.
Yeah, that's a Showtime TV series. And it's funny, Scott, I hadn't seen Homeland when it was on regular TV. But it's one of these when it was broadcast. But it was sent to me to review. So I actually watched it with my wife, and we sat and watched the entire series, and we were pretty much transfixed right from the beginning. You know, a lot of intrigue, a lot of peeking around corners, and you didn't quite know what to expect. So the series in terms of content was quite good, and its presentation on Blu-ray was solid enough that it warranted, high ratings for me. So I included it for this year. Now, Prometheus, again, like a movie like The Dark Knight, Prometheus was a highly anticipated release. Ridley Scott, building upon the Alien theme, maybe even extending the story a bit, a prequel. So it generated a lot of interest in the community, a lot of interest among enthusiasts, film enthusiasts, as well as audio video enthusiasts who'd seen it, theatrically. So there were great things that were anticipated for Prometheus coming to Blu-ray. And, when it was released, I couldn't wait to sit and watch it. When I received it, I couldn't wait to sit and watch it. And it just looked simply magnificent in 3D. Just a captivating experience, both visually and sonically. Reference quality all the way around. And it came with a terrific supplemental package. That pretty much gave a soup to nuts perspective. And it had to be in my list for 2012. It was spectacular.
Well, there are a bunch more films on the AVS forum site that I definitely want people to go check out, because many of these I've seen and I really liked as well. Hugo 3D was fabulous. Singing in the Rain, another great catalog title. Titanic 3D. Just one quick moment on that. I did think that was a very good 3D conversion. Did you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Early on there was some complaints about, 3D converted films not being quite as rewarding as, films that were shot in 3D. But we've certainly seen a little bit of a turnaround. And of course, James Cameron was behind this. And he did a magnificent job with Titanic. I agree with you. It looks terrific. That's why it's on my list.
Yeah, great. And I want to say now that because we're recording this on December 17th, just a week or so before Christmas, that any of these titles would make excellent last-minute gift ideas, because they've already been vetted by this fabulous Blu-ray reviewer with the golden eyes and ears, Ralph Potts. I want to thank you so much for being here. It's been great talking with you, and look forward to having you here again to talk about Blu-rays next year.
Sounds great, Scott. Anytime.
Thank you so much. Now, you can read Ralph's reviews at avsforum.com. That's Audio Video Science, abbreviated avsforum.com, and including this best of 2012, as well as many, many more. He has reviewed in total, according to his bio, over 950 Blu-ray movies. So that's an awful lot of them watching Blu-ray. And, nice work if you can get it, I'd say. You can reach me, of course, at scott@twit.tv. And you can read my answers to listener and reader questions at hometheaterhifi.com. And I'm also going to start having some articles up on AVS Forum myself. So I'm happy to be there as well. You can also follow me on Twitter at HTGeekScott. Now, for the next two Mondays, the Twit Brickhouse Studio will be dark because next Monday is Christmas Eve and the following Monday is New Year's Eve. So we're going to take a little break. We will air an episode of Home Theater Geeks on Monday, December 31st, which will be a wrap-up that we've already recorded of the year in home theater with several journalists in a panel. And that was a nice, lively discussion. So I do hope you will tune in for that. Then on January 4th, we will pre-record a show of another group of journalists talking about what we expect to see at CES, which begins the next Monday, which is why we're pre-recording it. I will, and all of us, will be at press conferences at CES on that Monday. The next day, we will record the show for the following Monday, which will be me on the show floor interviewing people in the booths of CES. So a lot of CES action coming your way, and I'm looking forward to it very much myself. Many of my colleagues don't look forward to going to Vegas and CES, but I do because I always find fascinating stuff and great people to talk to, and I look forward to bringing much of that to you. So I wish you all a very Merry Christmas, happy holidays, whichever holidays you happen to celebrate. And look forward to seeing you again very soon. Until then, geek out.